In Syria, the armed opposition says it no longer recognizes Kofi Annan's ceasefire plan, but it's still not clear who was responsible for violating it. Is Syria headed to civil war, and will there be a foreign military intervention? In another development, a British newspaper has revealed that British Special Forces and the MI6 agents have set up camps on Syrian soil. But what is the real reason for the presence on another country's soil? Why are there so many unanswered questions when it comes to the Syrian crisis? Stay with us for another edition of News Analysis.
SAS Special Forces and MI6 agents are in Syria to help armed groups if civil war breaks out. This according to a source close to the British government. Earlier reports, however, indicate foreign forces are already operating on the Syrian soil in support of the rebels. The source says the British commandos in Syria would be part of an international force, including French, Turkish, and possibly U.S. troops. They're equipped with high-tech satellite technology to send out information. They are also entrenched in camps inside Syria near borders with Jordan, Lebanon, and Turkey. Only three camps have been leaked out, but sources in the British government say there are more. One of the three known camps used by the British Special Forces is As-Suwayda, southwest of Syria, close to the border with Jordan. The second one is near the Krak des Chevaliers, a historic castle, one of the most important preserved medieval castles in the world in the vicinity of Lebanon's border. And the third is the Jisr al-Shughurs near the Turkish border in the north. The new revelations come despite earlier reports indicating that Britain and the U.S., along with Turkey and a number of Arab countries, including Saudi Arabia and Qatar, are training armed militants and providing them with funds and weapons to cause havoc in Syria. Experts believe thousands of mercenaries and extremists from neighboring countries are pouring into Syria to fight the government.
The Western recruited mercenaries, they're coming from nearby regional countries, some of them not so nearby, Libya, coming from Iraq, Iraq is nearby, coming from Jordan, coming from the March 14 alliance in Lebanon. These are coming in by the thousands. Thousands of them are coming in. You know, they come at different times.
London and Washington have both repeatedly refused to rule out military action in Syria. At the same time, they have been pushing for regime change there. The Persian Gulf Arab countries continue to support militants in Syria by supplying them with funds and arms. There is no end in sight for the unrest in Syria, where thousands have been killed so far. It now seems that the West has even bigger plans, as it has Syria surrounded for an invasion-like scenario. Only time can tell if the West will once again defy international law and invade another country.
Joining me now live from Wisconsin, author and Islamic studies expert Dr. Kevin Barrett. I'd also like to welcome our guest from Beirut, political analyst Mr. Jihad Murakadeh, and editor of Signs of the Times, Scott.net, Mr. Neil Bradley, joining me via Skype from Paris. Thank you very much, gentlemen, for being with us. My first question to Dr. Barrett in Wisconsin. Dr. Barrett, let's start with the latest news that's been revealed by British sources confirming that UK troops are now on the ground in Syria, ready, they say, to help the armed opposition in case of civil war. Now, first of all, does the UK have a legal mandate to send its troops to a foreign country without UN approval? One source was justifying it by saying that, in his words, safe havens would be an invasion of Syria, but a chance to save lives, and that's why we're doing it.
You know, this is such a doublespeak and hypocrisy that we're hearing from these Western countries. Essentially, what we have now is a complete revocation of the international order that grew out of the Nuremberg trials after World War II. The most important fundamental tenet of international law that grew out of the Nuremberg trials is that aggression is the supreme war crime. Violating the borders of a sovereign country is the supreme war crime. It's worse than genocide. It's worse than any other imaginable crime that a human being can commit, because that crime leads to all the other crimes. It leads to mass violence. It leads to war, and war, of course, is legally, ritually sanctified mass murder, which gives cover to all of these other crimes. With the 9/11 inside job, the Western powers, or that is a tiny cabal that is in control of the Western powers, has tried to reset the clock and to throw out the Nuremberg precedent and create a world in which they have the right to invade any country they want anytime and to violate other countries' sovereignty in a blatantly criminal manner. And they've been doing this constantly since 9/11, and it looks like they're doing it again in Syria.
Right. Mr. Murakada now in Beirut. Of course, a lot has been said throughout the Syrian crisis by the mainstream media about the humanitarian crisis that the Syrians are facing. But we know that the SAS and the MI6 do not enter the soil of another country for humanitarian missions. What could be the role that these special forces are playing in Syria now?
It is a humanitarian mission in a way, because if they were to secure certain areas for the refugees, in a way it is, you can imagine it is a humanitarian mission. On the other hand, I do not think that there is any problem with any foreign intervention, because there is already a foreign intervention on behalf of the Syrian government. So interventions on behalf of the Syrian government or intervention on behalf of the opposition, they are both, in my opinion, they are both the same, because both of them are just aggressors. And as Mr. Kofi Annan himself put it, the major aggressor is the Syrian government.
Well, I'd like to bring in Mr. Bradley on this as well. Speaking of the mission that these special forces are having, let's have your take on this as well, Mr. Bradley. At the same time that they are saying, these British sources, that these are people who are creating safe havens for those who are fleeing the Syrian crisis. And I guess they're in Beirut saying that that is basically part of a humanitarian mission. However, the same sources have been saying that in case civil war occurs, these people are going to be, these forces are going to be engaged in fighting. So what do you think their operation in Syria is about? What's your interpretation?
To put it simply, it's a cleanup operation. These MI6 and SAS forces were already along the borders of Syria, if not within the country. A British publication last November said that, the Daily Star, I believe, that MI6 and SAS forces were already, by that time, training the so-called FSA, Free Syrian Army, communications, supplying with weapons, and literally directing operations within Syria. So what we're seeing now is only the result of conditions already created beforehand, where the timing of their official, if you like, admittance that, yes, we're sending in special forces to Syria, could only have happened after the previous sequence of events. Of course, last week we saw the horrific Al-Hula massacre, and it's clear from the reports within Syria that the Syrian army had nothing to do with this, and that this was in fact carried out by armed gangs rampaging through the villages. So really what we're looking at is, if you like, typical kind of reporting in the Western media, where they report after the fact of what they have already done.
Well, now that you refer to the Hola massacre, I'd like to discuss that point as well with Dr. Kevin Barrett now. Dr. Barrett, a lot has been said since the Hola massacre occurred, and some observers are saying that that was the happening that led the international community to pile up the most intense pressure that they have had yet on Syria, to go ahead with the UN condemnations and to now call for military intervention. First of all, who do you think was behind the Hola massacre, in your opinion? Do you think that we can even clarify who did it, because of the situation that Syria is facing now in journalistic terms? Is it possible to do that?
Well, it's interesting you ask that, because I was here on Press TV, I believe, within 24 hours of the Hula massacre, and I was asked about my interpretation of it, and I said we need to wait and see. Rather than rushing to judgment and attributing this massacre to the Syrian government, which is what the Western media was doing, we need to wait and find out what the reports from Syria tell us. And it turned out that I was right. As our other guest just said, the reports from Syria indicate that this was actually carried out not by the Syrian government and not even by a pro-government militia, but by an anti-government militia, or call them terrorists, if you will. It was a classic false flag operation, probably designed to demonize the Syrian government, create this big media event that would be used precisely for this purpose, to bring in Western forces violating Syria's sovereignty. So I think that my initial sense that we needed to wait and see who was responsible for that massacre has been vindicated by these reports. And people need to be aware that these kinds of false flag media events, in which one side goes out and creates a massacre or a terrorist incident to blame on another side, are very common, and we need to keep our eyes open for these.
Right. And in Beirut now, Mr. Murakada, I know you want to give your response to this. Let me just put this question to you as well. The government in Syria has always been saying that we want to rather recognize these ceasefire plan. We're only going to launch attacks if we are attacked. Basically, why do you think, what reason would there be for the government to launch this massacre? And at the same time, do you think that the international response was hasty on this?
First of all, I do not agree with the other two gentlemen, because basically the reports that they cite from Syria, I hear other reports from Syria, so I don't know who we are going to believe, the reports that they hear or the reports that I hear. On the other hand, the reports that I hear say that the government forces are responsible for these massacres, so it's your word against mine, or the word of one of the sources against your sources. This is on one hand. On the other hand, I think it is a little bit outrageous to say that the people who killed the Sunni families of Hula, and we have reports directly from Hula indicating, and you can read the Washington Post today, indicating specifically which families were martyrized and killed by the terrorists of the regime of Mr. Bashar al-Assad, basically Shabiha, who were involved, because they came from Alawite villages around the area, and you can read all about it. So basically, I can believe what I read in the Washington Post, and you can believe what you heard from the Syrian government. However, there is one problem. The Syrian government has lost all credibility in the international community. The Syrian government has lost its credibility with Kofi Annan himself, who's basically said, well, basically, there's nothing I can do anymore. The international community has to review the situation and come up with a new plan, because my plan has failed. Right. Because the Syrian government, who was supposed to withdraw its forces or its heavy armed forces from the cities, has not done so. So basically the credibility of the Syrian government is totally in shatters. Right. And you are telling me here on TV that you believe the reports of the Syrian government or the speech of President Bashar al-Assad yesterday? This is absolutely unbelievable. Yes, it goes for the people who believe him, but the international community does not believe him. He's lost all credibility.
Right. Our guest in Paris now, Mr. Bradley, speaking about the Hula massacre that you raised, now different opinions voiced here. Of course, the Syrian government has been saying that, despite the fact that the government, they're saying that Sunni families were killed in Hula, Alawite and Shia Muslims were also killed there. However, this has not been portrayed by the media, and it's not been represented. And also we're hearing an independent, for instance, Russian report saying that entire pro-government families were massacred in Hula. So how can we basically come to the truth in this?
Unfortunately, that will be made very difficult by the fact that the story has been so overblown. Well, not to minimize the seriousness of the actual attacks, but it's been created this enormous, in what the spokesman for the Syrian government said, a tsunami of lies directed against the Syrian government, that there is so much emotional investment now attached to this that it's very difficult to even attempt to find the facts, the truth from the lies at this point. However, it's true that the Russian reporters have been on the ground, and they have interviewed survivors, witnesses, and overwhelmingly, they found that they were, in fact, supporters of the Assad government. It makes no sense that the Assad government would do such a thing, especially with so much international tension at this time. When we think of what's happening on the geopolitical stage, the Annan plan, the attention on Syria, Why on earth would the government be in any way involved in such a thing? If you look at the reports that came out just before the Hula massacre,
right,
in which the, I believe it was, no, this is not just before, this has been stated before, but it's not in a report as such. Kofi Annan, and, you know, Ban Ki-moon, the current UN Secretary General, is on the record as saying that he believes the forces are predominantly made up of Al-Qaeda members or people affiliated with Al-Qaeda. We have a situation here where the United States and NATO regimes are aligned with the very same terrorists. They have been telling the whole world since 9/11 are A, responsible for 9/11, and B, justify bringing in police state measures on a global scale. And here they are in Syria, arming, training, directing operations. It's quite incredible when you think about it, and yet it makes perfect sense when we look at
Well, let's look at another development here. Dr. Barrett, we're also hearing of the armed groups making an announcement today saying they no longer recognize Kofi Annan's peace plan and that they're not going to be committed to it or observe it. And also the day before that, President Bashar al-Assad was saying that he's going to be very adamant and decisive in his fight against what he calls terrorism. So do you think that this is an official end to the ceasefire plan?
Well, I hope not. If so, it's going to be a tragic development. It does look as if primarily it's the Western powers that are signaling, giving a green light to the anti-government forces. And there's a very different, disparate group of anti-government forces in Syria, ranging from peaceful democracy protesters, who I would fully support, to these armed thugs and terrorist mercenaries hired by the NATO countries that I wouldn't support. But the bottom line here is that regardless of what one of these two guests just said and his quoting of the Washington Post, the Hula massacre does appear by all reports I've seen out of Syria to be a false flag event designed to trigger Western intervention in a more decisive way in Syria. So what appears to be happening is that these Western decision makers have pushed the button to escalate the war. And this is very, very bad news. The Russians are not going to take this lying down. Once again, we're seeing these baby steps towards a full-scale war in Syria. And I would like to say that anybody who believes a word they read in the Washington Post is completely out of their minds. If you think Bashar al-Assad lacks credibility, just read what the Washington Post and the New York Times have had to say about the obvious false flag attack on 9/11, their complete cover-up of Building 7's demolition and so on. The U.S. media has lost its credibility at least a decade ago, and anybody who relies on them for facts about what's happening in this kind of situation is living on another planet.
Right. Mr. Murakata in Beirut, first of all, when we are speaking about the ceasefire plan, would you also agree that this ceasefire plan has officially come to an end and it's no longer going to work? On the other hand, who is responsible for violating it? Because let me just quote for you, the UN monitoring team has said that during the ceasefire, and I'm quoting here, the level of offensive military operations by the government significantly decreased, while there's been an increase, in their words, in militant attacks and targeted killings.
First of all, let me reply to 9/11. Can we just stop talking about the 9/11 and credibility of the 9/11? Because the gentlemen, both of them, have their opinion about 9/11. I have mine. And both opinions are absolutely opposite. So let's talk about the credibility of the press in general. On the other hand, the issue of the plan, the Kofi Annan plan, it is not me who said the Kofi Annan plan has come to an end. It is Kofi Annan himself who said that the countries who have given him this mission, he said this recently in the GCC meeting, he said the countries who have given him this mission have to reconsider their position. So he did not say it has ended, but in a way he hinted that it has failed, that he has failed. And finally, one more point, Ban Ki-moon himself and Kofi Annan said that the onus was on the Syrian government himself, because it was the largest military force, to get the plan into action. And it is the Syrian government itself who has not actually taken the right steps that were asked from him in the Kofi Annan plan. So basically, I don't know where they are coming from, but if I hear Kofi Annan and if I hear Ban Ki-moon,
right,
I know that the Syrian government is responsible. On the other hand, the UN observer mission on the ground has said something totally different about the Houla massacre, and indirectly they have accused the Syrian government, first of all, of shelling civilians, which the gentleman did not allude to, okay? And on the other hand, the issue of the massacres. Now, if they really want to know who is responsible for the massacres, then they should allow, the Syrian government should allow, an independent UN mission.
Right.
Is the Syrian government prepared to allow an independent investigation into the matter? I doubt that.
Right. We're running out of time. Mr. Bradley, quickly if you can, one other issue that I want to mention in this program is the role that various countries have been playing during this ceasefire. For instance, we saw verbal support for the ceasefire plan, for instance, by the likes of the United States or Turkey or Lebanon or whatever. But we saw some of these countries, Saudi Arabia, being accused of doing that, Qatar, the United States, of giving arms to the opposition. What a kind of role did these countries have, if they indeed had, in breaking this ceasefire?
Well, they have had a full role in supporting the American, Israeli, British agenda in Syria. The ceasefire, the plan with Kofi Annan, this is all just a ruse. It's really just a matter of buying time for the agenda. With the timing of the Houla massacre, this is just the next step towards doing what will be done. The ceasefire is really just, like I said, it's a ruse. It's only a stopgap measure. The people even who promote the ceasefire, well, naturally people want the bloodshed to end, of course, but this will not stop the range of forces that are against the Syrian government. The Syrian government is damned if it does and damned if it doesn't.
Right, Mr. Bradley, I'll just stop you there if I may, because unfortunately we're lacking in time, and I'd like to give the last comment, so I guess in Wisconsin. Dr. Barrett, if you could conclude for us, do you think that there will be a military intervention, and what will be the repercussions? Is that the solution for the Syrian crisis?
Well, I'm told by sources that I trust that the policymakers in the U.S. know that they cannot enforce a regime change in Syria the way they did in Libya. So what that means is, I suppose, that they're going to be escalating the situation, but I don't think they're going for an all-out endgame by utterly destroying the Syrian government with air power and so on. The reason they can't do that is that the Russians are basically not going to allow it to happen. So I'm afraid we're in for an escalation of the bloodshed in Syria, but I don't think there's going to be a clean resolution either way anytime soon.
Thank you very much. In Wisconsin, author and Islamic studies expert Dr. Kevin Barrett there. Thank you very much, sir. And I'd also like to thank our guest in Beirut, political analyst Mr. Jihad Murakada. And joining us via Skype from Paris was Mr. Neil Bradley, editor of Signs of the Times, Scott.net. Thank you very much, gentlemen, for being with us. And thank you, viewers, for staying with another edition of News Analysis. From me, Homa Lezgi, it's goodbye.